to the very next thing on the list.
Doctor, help me!
They're coming with us.
We are Vikings!
You fight or you die.
They're called the Maia.
The deadliest warrior race in the galaxy.
One of them, yes. Why?
I am a Viking, and we will crush you on the field of battle.
Because I think this village just declared war on
you. You will beg for mercy.
It's going to be a war. Here's some news. We're going to win the hell out of it.
Why are you here?
I'm the Doctor, and I save people.
Spoilers.
The Discussing Network presents Discussing Who, a Doctor Who podcast. I'm Kyle Jones, and I want to start this week by welcoming back Lee Shackelford. Lee, how are you?
I'm very well indeed, and really, really glad to be recording again with the two of you. So it feels like it's been forever.
It's been like I need to put it in a diary for 5, 10, 20, 2,000 years, maybe.
2,000 years.
Yeah. Who knows? Well, welcome back as always. And you know what? I would say welcome back, Clarence Brown, but this week, as for the name on the video that I'm seeing, I'm going to welcome back False Clarence Brown. False Clarence, how are you?
Yeah, False Clarence, Fake Clarence, we're going for all those today. But glad to be with you guys. Can't wait to talk this one out. So,
yeah. Well, you know what? Original Clarence, False Clarence, Fake Clarence. I'm just glad we have a Clarence. So there you go.
Yes.
So, gentlemen, what have you been up to since Christmas? This is the first recording, except one other episode where we did comparing different doctors. Oh, yeah. What have you guys been up to since Christmas? Clarence, I'll start with you.
Well, since Christmas, not a lot. Just came back from a trip to New Orleans, as some might say.
Yep.
So, you know, stayed on Bourbon Street with what, 8-month-old? So you can imagine the fun we had there. Yeah.
That's early exposure.
Yeah. Getting a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Well, Clarence, really quick before we move on, I do want to say, since we've recorded, your girlfriend has been watching something that is near and dear to my heart, and I have enjoyed hearing her feedback. So tell her thank you. She's been watching Death in Paradise and has watched all the seasons. So I'm glad she really enjoyed that. So make sure she checks out Beyond Paradise as well.
I'll be sure to let her know.
All right, good deal. So Lee Shackelford, what have you been up to since the last time we recorded?
Been in the trenches on this documentary that I'm working on, A Train Near Magdeburg, and was flown to New York by the company to watch the first episode, a, you know, quote, final cut. I'm doing air quotes here. because it's never final. And, but it's the most complete assembly that we've seen of the first episode yet. And it's still got some rough stuff that we got to iron out, but, boy, I'm optimistic. And the version that we have now that still needs work is going to ITV on, as we record this, on Monday. So, it's a big deal. It's a big deal.
Awesome.
But, in honor of, our watching this Viking episode, for people who are watching this on video, you can see I'm wearing my Lewis Chessman t-shirt. This was, I got to see the Chessmen when I was in Scotland. Among the oldest and best preserved artifacts of the time of the Vikings in Britain. It was clearly somebody's cherished chess set, and some of the these intricately carved pieces, these beautiful, beautiful things, and they're in the museum in Edinburgh. And apparently this was a big part of Viking culture, that we have records of people, you know, in their will, that the first item they mention is, my best chess set goes to my son, and things like that. So
So chess has been around that long?
Yes.
That's the amazing part here that I'm getting.
That's right.
Story. Yeah. Jesus.
Right. So yeah, a very sophisticated culture, but you know, they still don't know what to make of Sonic Shades.
Mm. Well, you know, just snap them off, throw them on the ground.
Just,
you know,
break them in half.
Yeah.
You know, so. I remember we were all not fans of the Sonic Shades. So I remember everyone having a sigh of relief. You know, it was like, finally.
Thank you.
Well, since the new year has happened, I binged and I am complete my binge, because I think I maybe mentioned this in our last recorded episode, not the last one that went out, of course, on the feed, but that I was watching Silent Witness, and I have watched all 26 available in the U.S. episodes. So I had to move on after that. So I watched an episode or a series, complete series called Prime Suspect with Helen Mirren, and I shared a picture or several pictures from one of the episodes with Peter Capaldi that neither one of you recognized.
Well, I was pretty sure it was Peter Capaldi, but you almost hate to say so, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a good example. So watch, go find the, if you're in the U.S., BritBox, if you're not in the U.S. and you're listening, wherever you find it on, it's called Prime Suspect. Again, Helen Mirren. There is a Peter Capaldi episode. Go check it out. He does an amazing job, but let's just say he took his very curly, naturally curly hair, he took advantage of it in its full glory, let's say.
That is true.
So another thing I want to say really, really quick that I didn't mention to you guys, I watched another 4 episodes. So it was a series that didn't last very long. Again, this was on BritBox. I watched it this weekend. And Lee, I want to point this question before I say what I've watched. I want to point a question to you. And my question is, when writing and considering characters, do you think we as a fandom latch on to the one actor's character more than anything? And Clarence, I can point this to you as well. Do you think, like, for instance, Tom Baker, is he always the fourth doctor to people if they see him in something else? Or does the actor transcend the role if they're in something else? Or do you always see them as that iconic character? What do you guys think?
I love it when an actor can make you forget the thing that you know them best for. You know, I think, Kyle and I, as fans of Babylon 5, we can quickly point to an example of Alfred Bester. That if you're thinking that's Mr. Chekhov at any point, then Walter Koenig has fallen down on the job, because I did not. I just don't think about Chekhov. That character that Walter Koenig is just, So. Mm.
What do you think, Clarence? Do you think a character can become so iconic to an actor that you can't see that actor as somebody else?
Oh, man.
I think more often than not, they do fall into that trap of every other thing they appear in, the person just sees that whatever they're known for. I mean, if you see Mark Hamill, you're going to think of Luke Skywalker, and there's like myriad other examples. So, yeah, it can definitely happen. But to Lee's point, if they can transcend that, I think you really see how great an actor it is. I don't know if I can give an example of somebody who's done that, but it does happen.
All right. So,
well, I know it's just a voice performance, but it is interesting that you pick Mark Hamill. He's actually spent most of his career being the Joker.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Years and years, I did not know that was him. So that is a good example there.
But you can't see him, so yeah.
Yeah, you know.
So here's where I was going with that. Ah. In this particular series, 4 of the main characters were characters I knew from other properties. And for the most part...
Actors you know from.
Yes. From actors that I knew from other properties. Thank you. One of them, Don Warrington, of course, is from Death in Paradise. He's the commissioner. One of the other characters in there was the actor who portrayed Martha's mom, but the two main characters, Alex Kingston, and the other character that was the main character was Noah Clarke. So you got Mickey and you've got River.
River. Yeah.
So for the most part, they transcended. I didn't see River and I didn't see Mickey. There was one scene where the two of them were romantically involved, and my brain was just like, I can't take it. This is River. Right. This is Mickey. They're not supposed to be doing this.
that'll send sparks off your skull. Well, I mean, off one point after we'd recorded one of these shows, I was telling you about my most recent one like that, and it is germane to Doctor Who. The revived Vandervox series that features this tough-as-nails, hard-bitten, mad-at-life kind of guy. And I just thought, this performance is so good. I just love this guy. And I had to go look him up and realize that the last time I saw him, he was Elton in Love and Monsters.
Mm. Yes, I remember you saying that.
Yeah.
What? What?
So cool.
Yeah. And he, there's no overlap between those two characters. The same. God bless him.
Well, so cool. Anyway. Cool. So moving on and talking about characters changing from one role to another, we do have a little bit of news since the last time we recorded. And the news is Millie Gibson will be leaving after one series.
Oh, it's official now.
It is official to be replaced by, and I'm sorry if I butcher her name, Virata Sethu. I believe, Sethu. I'm not sure. So again, I believe I am butchering your name, so I apologize in advance. But she is most notable in the U.S. for her role on the series on Disney Plus, Andor, and she has also been in the movie Jurassic World Dominion. So my question is, what do you guys think about Ruby Sunday exiting stage left? Clarence?
I hope.
Or either one of you. Go for it.
I hope this season has been written so that she has a proper exit that makes the
time. Yeah.
Because we got a big question mark about her beginning. So I would love to have that tied up, you know, in her last episode.
All right.
Yeah. It sounds to me as if this may have been the plan for her character from the beginning. We have this tight one season that features her, the stories feature her progressing and are intricate to her character. And after that, she's done. Maybe the door is open for her to come back at some point. Who knows? But yeah, I think they're just serving the story and not really serving the actor in this case.
Mm. So I'm going to give a theory here. They have not released, they've released the fact that there is a new actor joining. Millie Gibson's leaving, new actor is coming in. And I do think it's noticeable that the first time in Doctor Who history, both primary cast members are non-Caucasian. I think that's awesome that, for the first time in any time in Doctor Who history, you've got both are non-Caucasian. Love that. But my wonder and my theory may be maybe Millie Gibson is leaving, but Ruby Sunday is not.
Oh.
Bum, bum, bum.
Oh, Lord. We're going down this road, huh?
Yeah.
What if, because they've already referred to her as a foundling, they've already said that you can't find her parents. Could she be the same, from the same place the Doctor is originally from, and thus regenerates at the end of series one?
That would be very interesting.
Our next series? May not be, but...
We've been mixing up regenerations just about any way we can. So, yeah, that would be an interesting variation. It's the companion who regenerates.
Yeah, I like it.
Yep. Well, anyway, I just think that would be so awesome. I think that would be so cool if they did do that. And if you are watching the video, you will see there's a picture on the left of Ruby Sunday, and there is a picture on the right of possibly Ruby Sunday.
Wow, so, you're really pulling this one, aren't you? Do you have any insider information, sir?
No, I don't. I just, how I am whenever I get a theory in my head. So that's my theory.
You heard it here first, folks.
Yep, indeed.
You've been right before.
All right. So what I am right about that I know I am right about is I love saying my spoiler warning. So for everyone listening, if you have not seen The Girl Who Died, put us on pause. Go out. Watch the episode. Come back. Because from this moment forward, spoilers.
Spoilers.
Affirmative.
Spoilers.
Spoilers? What spoilers?
And I killed Sparky, too.
Alrighty, the spoiler warning has gone out, and we are back to review The Girl Who Died. This is the fifth episode of the 2015 series of Doctor Who, first airing on the 17th of October, 2015. It starred Peter Capaldi as the 12th Doctor and Jenna Coleman as Clara Oswald. Stephen Moffat and Jamie Matheson co-wrote the story, part one of a two-part story. So summary view, Lee, I'll start with you. Summary view, what say ye?
Well, I was just listening to our review of something. I was listening to a discussing who, and now I've forgotten what the episode
the
was.
The witches but familiar are the maybe, magician's apprentice, maybe?
Maybe.
Maybe. You listen to all of them.
It's good. Yeah, well, I do. But I just remembered that we talked about how much fun it was. And that's something that we want from our Doctor Who. And I just think this, you know, these 45 minutes here are just a lot of fun. And I read a review online, somebody writing about The Girl Who Died, and they said that this is proper Doctor Who. And what they went on to say was, the funny parts are genuinely funny. The sad parts are genuinely sad. And when it's supposed to be exciting, it's genuinely exciting. And I thought, I couldn't have said it better. It's really true.
All right. Clarence, what say you?
I think I enjoyed this one. I do agree with Lee that there were definitely some fun parts within this episode. There were some parts that also left me confused where I had to rewind and watch it again. Like, oh, that's what happened. So that happened a couple of times to me. I don't know if it compares to the episode it's trying to parallel itself to. By the end of it, but yeah, I think it's a pretty good episode. I don't know if I loved it, but I really liked it. So I can't wait to dive into the details.
All right, so I have a real quick question for you. What episode is it trying to parallel itself to?
Well, they make reference to the fires of Pompeii, and we're going to get into it with the face of the Doctor and having to break the rules. Which he did in that episode, and he kind of does it again here. So they're trying to parallel that here. Again, I feel like the Fires of Pompeii episode was a little bit more epic, in my opinion. The stakes felt a little bit higher. But I do think there are a lot of good qualities in this episode that we're going to talk about. So, yeah.
I'm glad you said that, because one of my questions, and I'll go ahead and ask it before I give my summary view, which is, I asked toward the end of my notes, do you think this story is in many ways the reverse of the fires of Pompeii?
I don't know if I'd say reverse. There are a lot of similarities. But I don't know if I'd say reverse. I would love to see where you're coming from with that.
All right. Lee, answer that question real quick, and then I'll tell you why I said that.
In the sense that there's a community, or that there's some people that are going to be saved when otherwise it doesn't make any difference to history.
Well,
I mean, that's the parallel that I see.
Yeah. Well, and the reversal was in the fires of Pompeii, he wound up saving one or a few and left the greater. Whereas in this one, yes, he did wind up saving everyone, but at one point, you know, he saves the village, but one is sacrificed. So that's where I'm getting the reversal of fortune.
Yeah, but she's not really dead. Yes. That's all right then.
But that's all right then. But so from my summary, this is a good episode for one particular scene. This isn't one of my go-to two-parters that I like to go back to and rewatch. It's a fun watch to me, but for my cup of tea, it's kind of not my cup of tea. And I'm wondering if it's not my cup of tea for one particular reason that we'll get to in a moment.
Well, can I ask, how is this episode received? And I may have been watching as it aired when this actually came out, so I don't really remember, but how was it received at the time? Because getting Maisie Williams is like a huge get. I mean, Game of Thrones is at the top of the charts, and they managed to get this actor who's playing somewhat of a similar character in a small sense in this episode. So was it a huge thing to have her come aboard at the time?
It's, my recollection of the press at the time was that that nobody mentioned anything else. It's like, that's the reason for doing this episode is Maisie Williams. And since I didn't watch Game of Thrones, I got bored with that very quickly. Like, could we talk about something else about this? So, you know, and she's excellent, of course. She's,
yeah.
And she is completely excellent. And Clarence, you know, I said last night after we finished recording discussing Trek that next episode was not my favorite of the two-parter. And I'm curious, after not seeing it for so many years, that if my opinion is going to change. Because what I didn't like about watching this again after so many years was the fact of a Shilder to me came across as a watered down Arya Stark, meaning you've got Maisie Williams. She's Arya Stark in Game of Thrones. Let's put her in a Viking type and let's make it as much Game of Thrones as we possibly can without making her Arya Stark.
The Stark.
That's Tell me she's from Game of Thrones without telling me she's from Game of Thrones.
Bingo.
Yeah. I see what you mean. But, you know, what happens instead is that she becomes the source of that theme that Doctor Who so often revisits. And I'm always glad when they do, the power of story.
Mm.
And really, she, as the storyteller and the weirdo, is going to save the day.
Yeah.
And I love that. So.
All right, so let me ask you guys this question. When the Doctor and Clara arrive in the village, the Doctor makes eye contact with the Shilder, and there's this moment of deja vu, of recognition, of whatever the case you want to call it. Why? Why do you think the Doctor had this moment with a Shilder? How did you interpret watching that?
I do not remember the next episode at all. So let me just say that first. It felt very weird. It felt like one of those things we're going to get a call back to later on. Because we also get the additional dialogue from a Shilder that she's always felt different, felt special. The boys didn't like her, the girls didn't like her. And so she knows something is unique about her. And also, you know, this look with the Doctor. So, yeah, I really didn't know what that was about at the time.
Lee, what do you think?
No, I didn't understand it or feel like we were supposed to fully understand it at that point. And I always think it's interesting when we play with the Doctor's sense of time, because he does experience time differently than we do naturally.
Yeah.
And he doesn't remember everything, you know? So it's like, wow, has he met her at some point along the way and doesn't remember in some event that happened chronologically after this?
Yeah.
You know, in his personal timeline happened before this. So maybe we're going to find out. And I don't remember the second part of this either. So,
yeah, I vaguely remember the second part of this, but that being said, I don't remember the major, you know, talking points of it. But that said, I don't think they make a reference in part two to this, but maybe what Moffat was trying to show us in this was there are individuals in time, you know, in history that for whoever they are, that person themselves stand out to history, whatever that, you know, and whatever, you know, they just, I don't want to use the word destiny, but they have some type of destiny that is more important to time. I want to keep everybody as equal, but I also want to acknowledge that there are, in the greater scheme of things, everybody can't have huge, huge impacts. Some people can have personal impacts. You get where I'm trying to go.
There's ripples and there's tidal waves.
Yes. Fixed people in time, as Wynne Grace said. Yes.
Is she a Nexus level being or something?
Oh, she's a Scarlet Witch.
Well, and it is, maybe it's significant. Maybe the script is supposed to lead us to feel that the Doctor, he does know what's going to happen to her somehow. Because when Clara challenges him about the fact that the best he's going to do is have these people go down fighting. Mm. And she says, is that the best you can offer them, a good death? Mm. And, you know, instantly the doctor, really cynically, he says, a good death is the best anyone can hope for, unless you happen to be immortal.
Yeah.
Where'd that come from? Why did you say that?
Yeah, this episode does a really good job of, in the first half of it, seeing the doctor be almost cold in his approach. Mm-hmm. Very logical, like, okay, I told you what you need to do. Just run. You'll mm-hmm. be okay.
We've seen that before.
Yeah. You go from cold to being like the most loving, giving, I'm going to help you at all costs person.
Mm-hmm. But he has to get that kick in the pants from Clara. It's sort of like that's what she's there for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I want to back us up just a little bit. And speaking of Clara, because I think Clara has a very important moment in the evolution of Clara, of what she will become by the end of this series. And I think she has a huge moment in this story when we get the confrontation, I'll call it, or the conversation between Fake Odin and Clara. But before we get to Fake Odin and Clara, what do you guys think of the concept of the face in the sky Odin coming and appearing to these barbaric Viking?
You mean the obvious and hilarious shout out to Monty Python and the Holy Grail?
Yes. Oh, is that what it is?
It's identical. Well, the next time you see, when you see Monty Python and the Holy Grail, you go, oh, that's the joke from The Girl Who Died. Okay. Yeah. God appears to Arthur and his knights, and it's presented exactly the same way. There's a big hole in the clouds that he sticks his head through.
That's funny.
Yeah. And
so what did you think of Fake Odin? Seriously.
Which Fake Odin?
Not Dr. Fake Odin.
Not the doctor, but you mean the big hologram.
Yes.
Well, you know, if you're interested in the mythology, and I am, I like the fact that everybody's got sort of tattooing or marking around their left eye. And Odin, in Norse mythology, he gives up one eye. And the exchange is that he's now able to see the future. So he is usually depicted as having a patch over one eye because there's nothing there. But he also gained these extraordinary powers. In the kind of mythology that most of us were raised with, this whole idea of gods having to bargain to make things better for themselves seems very strange. But yeah. That's part of that story. And then when we finally meet the quote, real Odin, this alien invader who's pretending to be Odin, he has a sort of a mechanical viewer over one eye, which for fans of classic series, that will immediately remind you of the king of the pirate planet, the fourth Doctor adventure, and who's dressed very much the same way. This was a role that for which the showrunners wanted my hero, Brian Blessed, and Brian was not available, and he would have been masterful as always. But so we have this actor instead, whose name I don't know. I'll just call him not Brian Blessed.
There you go.
But anyway.
What did you think, Clarence?
I love how the doctor, I mean, we get into this after the doctor makes a statement of how an advanced technology can appear like magic. And of course he pulls out a yo-yo after that to show his advanced technology. But you know, it's kind of concept we have here. We have this alien with this advanced technology taking advantage of these people on Earth. And that is a concept I found really intriguing, really fascinating. Odin himself, I'm not really into the mythology of the character. So, I think it was very suitable as a villain for this episode.
Yep. I've never been a fan of Norse mythology. If I had to choose between Norse and Greek or Roman, I would go Greek or Roman, you know, any day of the week. Even though I do like Marvel's Thor, I overall just kind of, and I know this is bad, but I've always
seen Odin and Loki.
Loki and Odin and all of them. I'm kind of like, you guys are dumb. Y'all are just barbarians. Y'all are dumb. So he did come across well as dumb Odin. But
there you go.
But what didn't come across as dumb was Clara's interaction with him. And Clarence, I want to point this one to you. when she and Ishildur are taken aboard the ship, your thoughts on how Clara interacted with him, how she pulled off that scene, Jenna Coleman. What did you think?
I'm trying to remember, was this foreshadowed earlier in the episode? I think it was, but I think a statement was made, something about pretending, like you know what you're talking about. I can't remember if that happened. But anyway, when she got in front of Odin, she was, whether she knew the doctor could actually get them out of the situation or not, she was doing her best Dr. Clara impression. And this is when I really love Jenna Coleman, when she's in this mode. And for all intents and purposes, in this moment, with half of a sonic shade, she is the doctor. And she gives her best rendition of a doctor speech, telling this guy to leave this planet. You don't want to mess with us. And, you know, I just love when Jenna Coleman is in that mode. So a great, great speech from her, going toe-to-toe with Odin.
Yep. Lee, what do you think?
Utterly fearless. Utterly fearless. And, you know, it has to make you think of Rose trying that with the Sycorax in The Runaway Bride. And she's not as good at it. But you still got to admire her courage, because she just goes for it. And Clara's a lot better at it. She almost had this guy talked out of it. But the episode would have ended very differently.
Right? Yeah.
And it's worth pointing out, this is co-written, and I think largely written by Jamie Matheson, who we had the honor of meeting.
Right? Yes, indeed.
And he wrote four Doctor Who's, Mummy and the Orient Express, The Girl Who Died, Oxygen, which was just about to air when the weekend that we met Jamie Matheson at the convention, and my favorite, Flatline.
Yes.
In which Clara is essentially the doctor for the bulk of the episode. So chronologically, this is not only the same writer, but this is, you know, after that story where she's had to be the doctor, she's had some practice. And here she comes facing down Odin.
And you know what? I will add to what you guys just said. Clara from series 7 and Clara from series 9. I think Clara from series 7 would have been a lot more the Rose with the Sidorak as it was compared to her in this incarnation. My point is, as a character, there's been massive growth from when she first appeared to where she is now.
Well, think about her in the 50th anniversary special, when she's got two doctors saying, come on, we need you to be the voice of a witch. We need you to frighten these people. And she really doesn't know how. She can't just fake that. So yeah, this is not the same person. She has grown into this kind of thing.
And really quick, before we move on, while we're talking Clara, I'm talking about foreshadowing. At the very beginning, and this was something that I don't think I noticed the last time I watched this, when the doctor rescues her and she is back on the TARDIS and she gotten whatever is in her space suit out, in the background, you hear the cloister bell ringing. You know,
Something's up.
And again, a great use of sound, great use of foreshadowing. Why is it ringing? Well, we know at the end of this series why, but we don't know that. But anyway,
we didn't talk about that teaser at all. I mean, what fun that is. That's just a great way to get us into the episode.
So what did you think? Were you creeped out at that?
That is proper creepy. And I love the match shot where her face inside the helmet and then him pulling the helmet off of her. That's just such an effective match cut.
Great transition.
She's okay.
Oof. And did we ever see whatever was in there? They never showed it, did they?
Nope.
And that was brilliant.
What was on the bottom of his shoe? I mean,
Peter Capaldi has to make us believe that whole thing there. And I bought it.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, and I'll just add, I was equally impressed by his ability to pinpoint where she was based on what, you know, nebula or constellation or star she could see at the moment. That was pretty cool.
Yep.
That's pretty nice.
You know, I even put that in my notes to talk about, but it creeped me out to the point to where I was like, if it doesn't come up, I'm not going to mention it, because I hate creepy crawly things, and that was creepy crawly, and I don't. So let's talk about translating the baby. Thoughts on the doctor speaking baby? We already know he speaks baby. He spoke to Stormageddon back in the seventh series, I believe, not the seventh Doctor.
Yeah.
Thoughts about what the baby was saying?
I'll go first. I've never
you have a baby, Clarence. What did you think?
Yeah.
Yes, and I do not understand baby other than feed me or put me to sleep. But I've never liked this. So in this episode, I just kind of did my roll the eyes thing and said, okay, let's get through this. Kind of interesting, but, you know, I kind of tuned out when he started doing the baby talk thing. I'll say it's probably effective for the story, but still it's just something the Doctor does I'm just not into.
Mm. Lee, what do you think?
I'm kind of on the fence about it. I'd probably try to take it too seriously, but I always struggle with the concept that when we are infants, that we are far wiser than people recognize. Because then I would say, well, what happens to that? At what point do we start forgetting all of those wonderful things that we once knew? On the other hand, it's kind of a lovely idea that we come into the world being a lot wiser. and the longer we're in this life, the more we dumb down. But this baby is particularly eloquent.
Yes.
And so even though, or maybe because I have trouble with the whole concept, I was really moved by what this baby is experiencing and trying to express. And it all makes sense. So even if it's a silly idea, I think it was still used to really good effect. How about that?
Yes. You know, I think you said it very well. It was a silly idea used to good effect. It was a good story beat, a good story point with the Doctor making his decision to stay and then Clara saying the baby stopped crying. You know, I think that was a good story point. I do think it was eloquent, you know, very, very almost poetic, or if not poetic, of the things, you know, that were being said. Do I totally buy it? No, you know, I don't totally buy it. But this is also an episode where we're about to have a fake dragon coming in.
Right.
Another Game of Thrones reference. So what did you guys think of the fake story projection idea?
Yeah, this is one of the disconnects for me. I'm sure it was explained somewhere in the story, but I didn't ever get the backstory information that explained that once we got a helmet, we'd be able to project an image. Again, maybe I missed it, but I really never saw that kind of explained before it actually happened.
Well, I don't think it is properly explained.
It isn't.
But I had no trouble surmising that because the Doctor makes, he's really admiring Odin or whatever his name is. He's admiring his technology. And he says, you know, it's a pretty great hologram you can whip up there, you know, that kind of thing. So he's saying at least that the invaders, have that technology.
Mm.
But did we know that you could do it too if you got into one of their helmets? that does require some surmise on your part.
Think they were thinking that the audience, i.e. we, were a little smarter than what we are. Because I did not get that either. I mean, I get it in hindsight, and your explanation from both of you makes perfect sense. But just from watching it, I even went back and watched it again to see. Thank you. If I missed something. So let's go ahead and get to my favorite scene. I'll go ahead and say this. My favorite scene, which was the conversation about I hate losing and the realization of where he got that face. Mm. Thoughts? Lee Shackelford, why don't you take it first?
Well, for fans of the classic series, right, we know that whether he acknowledges or not, the Doctor has seen this guard on Gallifrey, and then later on he'll go swanning off with that guy's face.
Mm-hmm.
I was saying that we've never seen a companion regenerate before. That's not true, because the other example of this is Romana, who chooses to regenerate, and the face that she chooses is of somebody that they have just met. Mm. So she chooses to go off looking like Princess Astrid.
Astra. Mm-hmm.
So, and in both cases, it's because, you know, of the actors who are going to play these roles. You know, nobody thought when Colin Baker turned up early in the series that he was going to one day be the Doctor, you know, or that Lala Ward would be Roma after being Princess Astrid. But, you know, in canon, we just, the Romana's regeneration canonizes this. The Doctor, a Time Lord, can choose what they look like. Apparently, the females are better at it than the males are, we think, or something like that. Or the Doctor, you know, skipped school that day, which is actually more likely, and has never learned properly how to do it. But here it is, made canon in the new series. Subconsciously, the Doctor reached for, what's his name? It's like Catilius.
Yes. Roman name.
Yeah. Anyway. I would say all Romans are named Claudius, but anyway, that's not his name. But yeah,
he was Capaldius,
the skull Capaldius, that sculptor who he saved, and we had planted the seeds for this in Peter Capaldi's first episode. The first time he got a look at his face, he said, "Why did I choose this face?"
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we've paid that off here, and we made a story point about it. That was when the 10th Doctor said, came back to save somebody. And he says, this was a message I left to myself.
Yeah, save just one.
Save just one. I love it. I just love it.
All right. Clarence, what did you think of it?
I guess we missed the part when he bi-generates after this and goes to work at Torchwood.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought it was cool. Way to tie it in. Yeah, it was just beautifully illustrated by these images, these flashbacks that we see in this episode. I always love when they do that. I know you particularly love that, Cal. So yeah, just a great story point. And
would you like to share for anyone who may be new to the show why I might would have loved that? I'm curious.
I just think you like seeing older Doctor stuff come back specifically, but did you have another reason?
Oh, maybe the fact that it was...
You don't expect to see Donna Noble in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, yes. Donna Noble.
Yeah. Yeah, and the 10th, 14th Doctor as well, whatever.
I mean, you know, this is 2015. The 20th, I mean, the 50th anniversary is over. We'll probably never see those two again.
That's true.
But that wouldn't be all right then. Yeah. Who knows? All right. Well, gentlemen, I think we have pretty much talked this story to almost its conclusion, which is the Doctor saves a Shielder using Meyer or technology. So my question is, was the Doctor right to save a Shielder? Was the Doctor right? Thoughts?
Yes, why not? Why not? I mean, I don't see this as being a real breaking a fixed point in time or whatever. He's there. He's a Doctor. A Doctor saves people. Why? What's... Unless he's seen the logical conclusion of the future, which he probably has. He's a Doctor. He's a time traveler. But still, why wouldn't he save her in this moment while he's there and he is actively a part of this story? Save her. What is the... Why? Now, maybe how he saved her might be a bigger question that we have to think about. But why not attempt to save her if he can?
He's aware that he has created a hybrid life form. He says so anyway. I don't know if that's true. I mean, she's not genetically. I don't know. Anyway, but yeah, as so often happens on Doctor Who, we just do not talk about the fact that half of the village is dead. Dead.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but this has all been, that whole climax has been about save one if you can.
Yeah.
And this one, he knows he actually can.
And I know we will find out more in the next episode, but my wonder is what one of you just said, Clarence, I think it was you that said, is it more about whether or not he should have saved her, but save her in the way he did? Because is it, and again, we will find out more next episode, but you've created someone who can withstand the test of time, or can they? And is that fair to that person that you've just now done that to and you've left?
Do you think that's the reason? Have we ever seen a 2,000-year-old diary before or after this?
In the classic series, we saw a 500-year diary, and then later on, a 900-year diary.
Oh, gosh.
So that's the joke here. It just gets, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
All right. So, gentlemen, before we move on to our proverbial favorites, my question is, do either one of you have any other things that you wanted to talk about before we move on?
I had to go to the encyclopedia and look up some facts about nature, because somewhere along the way, I've gotten the idea that an electric eel isn't actually electric, that it's about their sting, and that it kind of feels shocking when you touch it. I was wrong. That is not true. A true electric eel can deliver a charge of almost 900 volts.
Oh, wow.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah. That's why they're called that.
Electric eel. Well, that's a shocker.
That's a shocker. They're part of a whole family of bioelectric life forms that live under the sea, mostly in South America. So why these are turning up in Norway is another question. But
who knows?
Move along. Yes. Let's move along. But yeah, 900 volts.
All right. Clarence, any other items from you?
The fact that they had the ride 2 days in the longboat was funny to me. Yeah. I got
to
chuckle.
And they're going to have to do it on the way. They're going to have to go back the same way. But it was necessary to get us away from the TARDIS, get his sonics away from him.
Oh.
You know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All he's got is his wits. So,
well, let me ask you guys about this reoccurring thing of the doctor refusing to say someone's name. And he starts with Lofty and he goes down the line, giving everybody a name that wasn't their name. It's just like, it's borderline rude, but it is a reoccurring thing that the doctor does a lot.
Hmm.
Yeah. I still haven't entirely forgiven this doctor for the way he treated Danny Pink. And I feel like Danny is the ultimate example of this. So I just never understood that.
But isn't it? Okay, so let me ask you this. Imagine you've just met 10 people, and chances are you're going to know those people for 2 days. You're never going to see them again. And you've got to figure out X, Y, Z, and 1, 2, 3 while you're there. Is it easier for you to make up a name for them that you will remember as opposed to make up a name find out and memorize their real name?
Yeah.
Not saying that that's right.
No, but
practical.
But as a practicality, you're probably right. Yeah. It is disrespectful, but it's still immensely practical.
There you go.
Yeah,
agreed. So. It is disrespectful. All right. So let's move on to our favorite. So let's start with favorite quote. So favorite quote, Clarence, I want to start with you. Favorite quote.
Clara asks the doctor, "What are you doing?" He responds, "Reversing the polarity on the neutron flow. I bet that means something. It sounds great."
Yep. Talk about your classic series shout.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah. All right, Lee, favorite quote.
Well, there's a joke that I just love in this, and I'm glad that I know the expression. Do you know what it means to go at something hammer and tongs? I don't know if that's largely British, if I got that from British literature or... But it's the image of a blacksmith, you know, pounding things out on the anvil, hammer and tongs. But it just means if you're really working at something hard and you're putting all your energy into it, and it can be a sexual euphemism to say that a couple's been going at it, hammer and tongs, because it's kind of the same image. Well, the doctor says, he says, you're the blacksmith and you've got a baby. He's been at it, hammer and tongs.
Oh, Lord.
That's at tea time.
At tea time.
Anyway, so I did enjoy that joke, but seriously, I love this challenge of Clara's. I mean, it's the big moment in the story. She's surprised that he seems to be giving up, and he says, "I'm worried about you." And she says, "Well, stop thinking about me and start thinking about them, because you're missing something. How are you going to win?"
Yes.
Always miss it right up to the last minute. Put down your sword, stop playing soldier, and look for it. Start winning, doctor. It's what you're good at.
Brilliant.
Kicking the butt.
Yes. Exactly. Everybody needs somebody like that to to talk that plan.
Yeah. All right. So my favorite quote came from my favorite scene, which is when the doctor talks about holding himself to the mark because he chose that face. Love that scene. I love when you point to a seed that you have planted and you give a revelation about it. That's one of the things I love about Doctor Who. So that's why that was my favorite quote and my favorite scene. So I'll start with me. That was my favorite scene. So Clarence, what was your favorite scene?
Oh man, I think your favorite scene has to be the blackmail video with Benny Hill theme running in the background and the threat of uploading it to the Galactic Web or Hub, I think they called it. Oh, yeah. Man, I love that scene so much. It seemed like they were having so much fun in the filming of it because looking at Jenna Coleman, as I often do, she was just – had this biggest smile on her face when she's holding up this phone with this big button on it.
Yeah.
I couldn't help but to love that, man. So that's my favorite scene in this episode.
Peter Capaldi is just dancing next to her too. Like, oh, good thing nobody recorded that. Oops. I'm afraid we did.
Oh boy. Yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful.
All right, Lee, what was your favorite scene?
Oh, electrocuting the alien invaders and, sucking their helmets off with electromagnet. Just science.
That was cool.
That sounds like a rock band. The Electric Eel and the Alien Invaders.
Electric Eel and the Electromagnets. Yeah, that's going to be the name of my band.
So. All right. So while you're thinking of the name of your band, Lee Shackelford, your final rating, what say you?
I just love this episode. I give it, five gods in the sky out of five.
All right, Clarence, we've got five gods in the sky. What say you?
I'm going to give this 4.2 videos with the Benny Hill theme out of five.
I'm going to give this, I like 4.2. I'm going to give this 4.2 memories of Donna out of five.
Yeah.
There you go.
You know how I saw that coming? I could almost have said it along with you.
Well, because, you know, poor Donna, she can't remember. So
we have to remember for her.
We've got to remember for her. So there you go. There you go.
Donna
and
Noble
Lee
has descended.
She has. She will descend. Or she has descended. Wibbly wobbly. Yeah. But yeah. Lee, I have a question for you that I should have asked at the very beginning. And that question is, if we have someone listening for the very first time, what do you like to say?
Well, thank you for hanging on for an hour through all of this. And we hope that you enjoyed it. But, you know, we recognize you got other things you could be doing. And we just really appreciate you spending this time with us. And Clarence likes to point out how you can do more, how you can participate.
Yeah. And you can do that by subscribing, leaving a review, or telling a friend. Word of mouth is always the best. If you have a review idea for us, please send that in with anything else you want us to know at todiscussingwho@gmail.com or hit us up at discussingwho on any and all social media.
Indeed, indeed. And gentlemen, as always, it is an immense pleasure to do this with the two of you. Thank you also to Wingrace in the chat for always being here and for our new person in the chat, Dr. Strange. Thank you also for being here and for everyone listening. Thank you for listening. Be sure to subscribe to the show, as Clarence said. Leave us a review. We will read it on the show. And as always, we will be back next time.